This is about a true story that happened to me when I was about, well, not happened to me, but I saw when I was about maybe 8 or 9 years old. Now, if you go to Wick now, there's no much to be seen of the old dry dock, the place where I used to spend many an afternoon lying over the pier wall fishing for peltigs. It's far changed. In my earliest days, I can just mind her with her gates closed and a boat in her, but for most of my childhood days, she was open, and one or two creel boaties were aye tied up in her. I mind in the winter, the rops aye had an old car tyre hanging on them to soften the jerk caused by swell running in for the bay. New though, the dry docks all been filled in. We building a new slip over at the harbour, she was made redundant, and a while back, the 70s it would have been, she was filled in, to be used by one of the oil companies for building structures on. Weird geometric things of pipe and girders that looked like some of the things I used to make out of my Meccano set when I was a bayeg, only far bigger. The time I'm going to take you back till she was still a gurgling black hole for the wee boats tied up. Some chills in the summer, if they was really daring, would dive off the side into the murky depths, but they had to watch because the sides of the dock were stepped and you had to keep wheel out when you took your plunge. At that time, one of the boaties that used to tie up in the dry dock belonged to a man called Dan Miller, a folk called Dan Boy Miller, because it was reckoned that he was so full of air that he'd always float, just like the Dan Boys that were used by sea netters. Dan Boy owned an old boatie, well over 100 years old, but he said was a purebred Zulu. Now Dan, he was fair prude of his boatie, not just for her lines, for to tell you the truth, she sat in the water wheel, but because she had a proper marine diesel engine. It was Dan's pride and joy. He used to lie stand aloof for the other chiels that had boats, because most of them didn't have proper engines. Just wee Austin car engines, fitted with all manner of adaptations to get them running. Reduction boxes, wee propellers and the like. Yeah, Dan was fair chuffed with his marine diesel. You see, he would say, a proper marinised engine doesn't get harmed by salt water. That's what makes it special. He'd say this, tipping back his cap, what he said was a sailor's cap, but it looked like it came off one of the northern Scottish omnibus drivers. Then, one day, disaster struck. Dan Boy was fishing for cuddings off the rocks at Proudfoot after lifting his creels. He wasn't doing two wheels, so he made up his mind to shift a bit. He wound up his line and then gave a swing on the flywheel of his engine. Nothing happened. He tried it again, but there was just a couple of pops for the exhaust pipe and no power. The tide was on him end, and Dan realised he'd soon be in trouble. If he didn't get the oars out quick, he'd be in danger of drifting onto the rocks for many a boat had gone afore. He got the oars out, and soon his sweat was lashing off his brew. And no matter how hard he thrashed at it, the boatie was aye getting nearer to the rocks. Lucky for him, though, Peter Flett, who had been further round ahead, came on the scene. He threw him over a rope, and soon Excalibur, for that was Dan's boatie's name, was being hauled at a fast rate of knots into the bay and into the dry dock. Dented Dan's pride, for Peter Flett's boat had a car engine he fitted. In fact, he made sure everybody at the pierhead kent full well. But he was a measurey man. At Hurley had a day or two passed, but Dan Boy was buoyant again. He had ordered a new marine diesel for Glasgow, as his old one was knackered. Every night, for the next fortnight, he could be seen hunched down in the bilges of Excalibur, howking and hammering and getting nothing ready for his new engine. £500 she'd cost him, and she was coming up for his sooth on one of Henderson's lorries. The day came when the engine arrived, and a fair crowd of folk gathered at the mouth of the dry dock after tea time to see Dan Boy's engine on the last stage of her journey. Dan was going to use a dock crane, a great big iron monstrosity, full of cogs and wheels and gears, and powered by a big long handle that was turned by two men, to lower the engine down into Excalibur. He had the engine mountings all ready and the bolts fitted to size for a plan that they'd sent him. That was all that was needed, was a gentle lower and a wee bit of chiggery pokery. He couldn't say that Dan Boy was poor with his hands. He twa chills at the handle, heaved the engine up, swung her round and let her down cautiously till Dan Boy done a blow. He grabbed hold of a corner, gave it a wee shove, and she settled just fine on the engine bed. She fitted perfect. "Right, boys, let her go," Dan yelled up at the lads on the crane. As soon as the slack came onto the cable, he popped the split pin into a shackle that held the sling round the engine. What happened next was just brilliant. There was a kind of cracking sound, and the engine disappeared, Straight through he bottom o' Excalibur he'd went. A great gush o' oily black water filled the boat, and she disappeared too, leaving just two things floating on the water, Dan and his cape. For a few seconds there was silence. You could hear nothing but his scories over the end of the pier. Then he'd broke. Nobody could have it in. You could have heard the laughter over at the Coast Guard station. Chills were weeping and hadding each other up. It was a good few minutes before somebody minded Dan Boy and gave him a hand to get up the ladder that ran down the side of the dock. "Man, Dan, that's the thing about a proper marinized engine. Salt water doesn't harm her. Can you start her up now, Dan, so as we can hear what she sounds like?" This was delivered by Peter Flett, who was hanging on to the side of the crane. Dan Boy stormed off, the water scooshing out of the tops of his wellies with every step that he took. It was a while before Dan Boy was quite so buoyant again.